I'd like to dedicate this shiur, Lilui Nishmas Chaya Adira Chana, Bas Shoshana, a student of mine who's Nifteret Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and for Refuah Shleima for her daughter Rachel Adira Chana, that she should have Refuah Sanefesh, Refuah Haguf, and be able to be a tremendous nachas to the entire family. I'd like to speak about the whole concept of Kevar Rachel, which is found in Parshas Vayishlach. The Torah tells us that in source number one, they journeyed from Beit El, and there was still a stretch of land to go to Ephrat. Rachel Imenu went into labor and gave birth to a boy. She calls the son Ben Oni, the son of my affliction. And Yaakov Avinu changes his name to Binyamin, the son of my right one, the son of my strength. And we know Rachel Imenu dies in childbirth and was buried on the road to Ephrat, which is Beit Lechem. And Yaakov Avinu set up a monument over a grave. It is the monument of Kevar Rachel until today. And the very interesting question that is the overall, overarching question I'd like to deal with Amir Tzashem today is first and foremost, why is it that Rachel Imenu is buried by Derech on the way? Why is it that she's not buried in Maris HaMechpelah? And the famous answer, which is offered by Rashi in Parshas Vayichi, when Yaakov Avinu tells Yosef that, I know you may be upset with me that I buried your mother on the way and not in Maris HaMechpelah. So there Rashi brings a very famous medrash that when the Jewish people are going to go into exile, they'll be able to pass by her grave and they'll be able to daven there, and Rachel Imenu will be able to implore Kodesh Baruch Hu on their behalf, quoting the pasuk in Yirmiyah, which we discussed at length last year, of Miniko Lech Mibechi Ve'Nayach Medima, Rachel Imenu, stop from weeping, stop from crying over your children, because indeed your prayers are heard and your children will return back to their borders. So Chazal seemed to say that the reason that Rachel Imenu is buried along the way was in order for A, the children to daven there, and B, for her to daven for her children, for them to return to Eretz Yisrael. The fascinating thing about this Kevar Rachel is that not only is this idea of her being buried and the focus of her burial found in our Parsha, it's really alluded to as well in two other Midrashei Chazal in Parshat Vayetze. The first is in source number 4a, that when Yaakov Avinu comes to Haran, and he's at the well, and he's asking the people there, do you know Lavan? And they say yes. And the Torah tells us, and it was when Yaakov saw Rachel, daughter of Lavan, his mother's brother, and the flock of Lavan, his mother's brother, because he had seen that Rachel was a shepherdess coming with the sheep. When he sees this, he rolls the stone off the well. He kisses Rachel. And here's the interesting phrase, Vayisad kolo vayech, and he raised his voice and wept. And our rabbis are troubled by this expression. Why is he crying when he meets Rachel? And the terminology here is a very fascinating term. Vayisad kolo, he lifts up his voice. It's not just crying. It seems to be a very intense weeping. And Rashi gives two interpretations found in source B. Yaakov wept because he foresaw that Rachel would not be buried with him in the cave of Machpelah. So as soon as Yaakov meets Rachel, which is a very bizarre medrash, what is he thinking about? He's just meeting her. He's thinking about the time she's going to die and be buried, that he wouldn't be buried with her, that she wouldn't be buried in Maris HaMechpelah. And obviously we have to ask ourselves, why is Yaakov Avinu thinking about this the first time he meets her? And the second interpretation Rashi gives is he's crying because he has no gifts to give her, because Eliphaz, his nephew, overcame him and stole all of his possessions and Ani Chashuv Kemet, and thereby fulfilling the wish of his father, instead of killing Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov said to him, if you take all my possessions, it's as if you killed me. He came empty-handed to Haran, and he was weeping that he didn't, like Eliezer, have any gifts, any jewelry to give to Rachel. which is also very strange. For that, he's lifting up his voice and crying. And these two interpretations seems to be so distant from each other. How could Rashi possibly bring them in the same at the same time? And obviously, there's a lot to learn. We're just going to examine a bit briefly this question. The other place in Parsha Vayetze that we find about, hinted at, Rachel's burial is found in the story of the Judaim, which we spoke about again last week. When Leah said, "You want my husband as well as the Judaim," and Rachel Imenu in 5a said, "Therefore he shall lie with you tonight in return for your son's Judaim." And on this, Rashi brings down in 5b that Rachel and Leah each had their own rooms and Yaakov alternated between them. That night, Yaakov Avinu was to be with Rachel, but she ceded the privilege to Leah in exchange for the Judaim. And here Rashi says, because Rachel made light of being with that righteous man, she was not privileged to be buried, to be in eternal repose with him. Which also begs to be understood. Just because she made this comment that tonight I will allow you to be with my husband, with our husband, in exchange for the flowers, for that she's punished, that she's not buried with him. And further, I thought that the reason she wasn't buried in Maris Machpelah, which Leah was, which is clearly stated in source number 3 in Parshas Vayechi, where Yaakov Avinu says, there they buried Abram and Sarah's wife, there they buried Yitzchak and Rivka's wife, and there I buried Leah. It's clear that Yaakov Avinu had buried Leah already in Maris Machpelah. So it would seem that the whole reason that she was buried on the way was in order for her to daven for her children. Now it seems it was a punishment for what she said. Well, what is the real reason why Rachel Imenu is not buried in Maris Machpelah? So this is our major focus. Why is it that we have so many references to the burial of Rachel Imenu? Why is it that Rachel Imenu is buried on the way? And why is it that Kever Rachel is such a popular place where people are davening Ad Hayom Hazeh? Well, even though people go to Maris Machpelah, it's not necessarily that they daven mamish by Leah Imenu's kefir. What is it? What's the attraction? What's the magnetic pull that leads people specifically to this kefir? Our secondary issue, which we're just going to tie in today for our purposes with this first issue, so we're going to look at it in a very specific light, is in Parsha Vayishlach we find that Yaakov Avinu wrestles with the angel of Esau, a very famous scene. And at the end, when Yaakov Avinu, when the angel asks Yaakov Avinu to release him, Yaakov Avinu says, "I'll only release you if you give me a bracha." And the bracha that the angel gives is that his name will no longer be Yaakov, but Yisrael. Ki saritem Elohim v'tuchal, Elohim v'tuchal. You fought with heavenly forces and were able to be victorious. And later in our parsha, when he comes to Beit El, right before Rachel Imenu dies, Akash Baruch Hu says to him, "Your name is Yaakov. Your name shall not always be called Yaakov, but Israel shall be your name." And then he called his name Israel. We have to understand what's the difference between Yaakov and Yisrael. And unlike Avram and Avraham, or Sarai and Sarah, where we don't use Sarai and Avram, but we call them Avram Avinu and Sarai Imenu, we do reference Yaakov Avinu sometimes to Yaakov and sometimes to Yisrael. We need to understand the underlying meaning behind both names and why is it that sometimes they're alternated one for the other. So let's begin sad, step by step. It's a very powerful insight of Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov in the Sefer Parshios in source number 8. Where he points out that we know that Leah Imenu had 4 children even before the Shvachos, even before the maidservants were given to Yaakov Avinu. And the first child she calls Reuven, Hashem saw my affliction. The next child, Shimon, Hashem saw I was hated. And the third child she calls Levi. And the Torah tells us why. Ki Amra, because she said, Hapam Yelaveh Elai Ishi. Now my husband will be drawn toward me. Now my husband will be attracted to me. And therefore, his name was Levi. So the question that all the commentators ask is, what is this idea of now she will be drawn, he will be drawn to me. That now my my husband will be literally a company to me. So many interpretations are given, right? Now that I have three children and I have my chelek, my husband will love me more. Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov has a fascinating chiddush. He says, the fact in source 8 that Leah Imenu had three children, she feels that she has become the primary wife. He shlamti kol yudi, I have fulfilled my whole purpose. Ein zor el shachafetz HaKadosh Baruch Hu lachzir li gam ba'ad hayamim shel sar shavu alai. And part of this is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to repay me for all the pain I went through, crying that I should land up in Esav's lot. V'lasoto ti rosh mishato shel Yaakov. And Leah Imenu believed the fact that she was privileged to have the children first meant that she was the primary wife of Yaakov Avinu. This is what Leah thought. And therefore she says, Dvuka bo vehu davuk bi me'ata v'ad olam. And therefore Yaakov Avinu will be attached to me forever in this world and in the next world. And he says here, it's very powerful. The end, the middle of 8, Makom echad hinichu sham ba'ara shel avos ha'olam, chutz mishel Yaakov. In the Maaros HaMachpelah, aside from Yaakov Avinu's grave, there's one grave empty. Makom zeh no'ad l'bat zugos shel Yaakov, and this is destined for the wife of Yaakov. Ve'ezehi harei arba anachnu, which one will it be? There are four of us. Atah pam yelavei shielai. Yadati gam yadati ki yelavei shielai. Ani kodemet lo. Li nichu oto makom b'mara. Ubevo gam ito elai yelavei el mekomi. Zachiti b'makom acharon shenishar l'kvura b'maras ha-machpela. Says Leah Imenu, hapam yelavei shielai means in the ultimate sense, my husband will escort me, livaya, a funeral. He will escort me to my final resting place in Maaros HaMachpelah. Leah Imenu's whole focus was to be buried near Yaakov Avinu. It wasn't only during her lifetime, now my husband will be drawn to me. No, no, no. It's much deeper that my husband will be drawn to me for eternity. With this, we can explain a sense of that Rashi, of when Rachel Imenu says, I will give my husband over tonight to you, why she loses the opportunity to be buried with Yaakov Avinu Maaros HaMachpelah. On a technical level, Rav Wolbe in Shirei Chumash points this out, Kaze omek hadin, oto laila haya hator shel Rachel, v'kevan shevitra l'leya zeh nikra zilzul mishkav ha-tzadik, v'kvar ne'nesha ba'onesh chamur shelo tikaver imo. On a technical level, a tzadikus is held responsible for everything she says. She was mezaza. She made light of Yaakov Avinu and therefore gets a severe punishment. And even though we know that she was buried along the way to daven for her children, if it were not for, says Rav Wolbe, for this slight statement, so she would not have been put along the way. Kadosh Baruch Hu only puts her along the way because she is punished, that she cannot be buried with Yaakov Avinu for this that she said. Now already that she's put along the way, she will be le'ezer levaneha, she will be as a help and davening for her children. But says the Sefer Vayavinu Bamikra, no. It's not as if it's Kila'achar Yad. You know, once you're there and you've sinned, okay, so now you'll daven for your children. He offers a fascinating insight. He says, the whole dynamics between Rachel and Leah was over their husband's love. And when Rachel Imenu asked for those dudayim, those flowers that had this fertility component to them, what Leah Imenu basically says to Rachel is, if I give you these dudayim, now not only will you have the husband's love, but now you'll have children. And that will leave me with nothing. Now at least I have the children and you have the husband's love. But now if you have the children, then I'm going to be left with nothing. And as we see by the children's names, she wanted so desperately to have this connection with Yaakov Avinu. And therefore, says Rachel Imenu, according to Avinu Bamikra, in the middle paragraph of 9, Va'alzeh Hishiva Rachel Tshuva Nara'a, Lachein Yishkavi Machalaila Tachatudei Benech, She'etzli Habanim Adifim Min Habal. For me, Leah, dear, she says, children are more important than a husband. She'im Ayin Meita Anochi She'maikar, if I don't have children, I wish to die. Vani Muchana Levater, and I'm ready to give up my husband in order to have children. And that was the argument. What was Adif? What was her preference, her husband or her children? And now we understand when it says that she was ready to give up her husband in order to have children, what she's basically saying is that my preference ultimately, and that's almost a mita keneged mita, my preference ultimately is to be with the children and not with the husband. That ultimately let Leah lie ultimately with Yaakov Avinu. But I would prefer to be with the children. For me, my connection is with the children. And that is why we find that she goes with her children to Golos. And this is the idea that for Rachel Imenu, her children are the Iker. And now we can explain, according to this level, that when Yaakov Avinu sees Rachel for the first time, the Torah Kedosha tells us in the asterisks in source 10, Shirachel ba'i matzol, that Rachel literally is coming with the sheep. And when he sees this, he cries that he won't be buried with her. According to this, it makes a lot of sense. What does the sheep represent? What does the sheep symbolize? Psukim in Yecheskel Novi, the sown is a is Kla Yisrael. He foresees, he visualizes that Rachel is the shepherdess par excellence. Rachel comes with her sheep. She comes with her kinderlach. She comes with her flock. And when he sees how Rachel will ultimately be connected, not to the sheep that are little animals, but to the ultimate sheep of Kla Yisrael, when he's able to visualize the first time he sees her, her deep connection to the Jewish people, that all the people, all the children are her children. She is the Akarat Abayit. She's the mainstay of the house, as the Maral points out on the section Vayechi. She is the magnet of the house. When Yaakov Avinu foresees this the first time, he lifts up his voice and he cries because he realizes that he won't be buried with her because she will be going with her children and he will be buried with Leah Imenu. He'll be buried alone without the children. Because for Rachel Imenu, the children is primary. And that's what it means, that when it says that Rachel Imenu is ready to give up her husband for the Dudayim, it's much deeper. She's ready to give up everything to have this aspect of being the mother of Klal Yisrael and being ready to be Moser Nefesh for whatever she needs for Kla Yisrael. And in fact, my friends, that is indeed what Kever Rachel has become. Source 11, the Or Daniel, Ima Rachel, Ha'ima Meforsemet Shel Kol Adoros. She is the mother of all the generations. She lived for a very short time. Va'af Hein Shel Sevel V'Yisurim, and she lived a difficult life. But she represents the Rachamim and the Ahava of an ima to her children. And even after she leaves this world, she's still with her children, davening for them, crying for them, and that Yeshuos and Nechamos should come from them. I'll tell you it's a tragic story, you know. We like to hear happily ever ending stories, but not life isn't happily ever ending. Someone this week was telling me a maisa that happened in South Africa, where a woman had a 2-year-old son, and she wanted to take a bath. So she asked the maid, did the gardener close the gate around the pool? And the maid said, yes. She went to take the bath. The gardener indeed had not closed the gate around the pool, and there was unfortunately a tragedy. And this woman said that the only comfort she was able to get over the loss of her son was that a Rav said to her, she asked the Rav, where is my child now? And the Rav said to her, Mother Rachel, Rachel Imenu, is in Shemayim taking care of all these little children. And this woman said for her, that was a great nechama, that she knew that Rachel Imenu was taking care of her child. Rachel Imenu becomes the paradigm of all of Klal Yisrael, the mother of all of Klal Yisrael. And I'll tell you personally, we live, Baruch Hashem, Ramat Beit Shemesh, which is almost exactly a half-hour drive from Kever Rachel. And now that one is allowed to take cars, I know that most of my friends have the schus. One day I'll also have the time to build it into a schedule, but they take carloads. They mamish go once a week to daven by Kever Rachel. And each of these women tell me about mamish yeshuos that they see in their lives and the lives of the people that they take, and how tefillos are answered. This is a tremendous makom tefillah. It's a tremendous place where you have the ultimate mother who's crying and looking after the needs of her children. But what's fascinating is that the Medrash tells us who was the first one really to daven at Kever Rachel. Who really was the one who was like the one who inaugurated that Kever Rachel should be the place to mamish daven? And the Medrash tells us, and the Or Daniel brings us down in the second part of 12. Kayadua harishon shebachal Kever Rachel, the first one to cry at Kever Rachel, haya bina b'chorash Rachel atzma Yosef, was Rachel Imenu's own child Yosef. The Sefer Yosher Muva shebishasha socharim shekanua Yosef mabur ovilo oto b'drachim b'darkam l'mitzrayim. When Yosef HaTzadik was being taken by the merchants down to Egypt, hey Marvu Liyada Kever, they went past this place. The Yosef Tekev Ratzmet Lama Kever Imo, and Yosef HaTzadik quickly ran from them for a number of moments, Ubachasham, and started crying there. Me'az Mishbechu B'makom Hazeh Nachalei D'ma'ot V'chol Hadarot. And since that time of Yosef HaTzadik crying at his mother's kever, at his mother's grave, throughout the generation, rivers of tears are found there of people davening. V'shel Rachel Imenu Abochal Banah L'Yisnei Hashem, and Rachel Imenu, who's crying for her children in front of Hashem, U'mema'enet Lehit Nachem B'chol Tzarah She'esh Lahem, and refuses to be comforted in all the troubles that they have. Why is Rachel Imenu buried by Derech? It's because Rachel Imenu is so connected to her children, and this is where she wants to be, always there to be ready for her children. Having said this, my friends, I'd like to try to be able to understand this perhaps a little bit more deeply. What is it about the difference between Leah Imenu and Rachel Imenu, that Leah Imenu is buried in the Maros HaMachpelah and Rachel Imenu is buried b'derech Hafrata along the way? Part of this piece we did a number of years ago. I just want to remind ourselves of this and then take it a step further than we have in the past. Rav Wolfson has a very famous essay, Wellsprings in Sefer Wellsprings of Faith, where he speaks about, and this is on the next page, 13 through 15, the difference between Hebron and Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a city of outward revelation, and because it had outward revelation, it was susceptible to destruction, and we have, until today, the parts of Yerushalayim are not yet fully rebuilt. Hebron, on the other hand, is like a deep sister subterranean city of Yerushalayim. It's, the ovos are buried deeply within the ground, and in fact, in source number 14, the Machpelah, on the other hand, was never a place of open revelation. The ovos are concealed there in secrecy, nor was it ever a place characterized by the active service of God, for the ovos came to Machpelah only after they concluded their days of active service. It is a place, therefore, which is not susceptible to the forces of Chorban. Anything that Chorban has the power to destroy was never to be found in Hebron. As a result, that which does exist in Hebron, The deeply hidden holiness of the Avos is completely invulnerable to Chorban. And that is why Chavron is really the letters of Chibur, of connection. The ultimate connection of Am Yisrael, of Kedusha, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, is Chavron. And that's why there's an idea that all prayers go up through Chavron. Because Chavron is the place throughout history that was never destroyed, that was never affected by Chorban, by destruction. Chavron maintains itself as the point of connection, as the point of closeness between the Avos HaKadoshim, between Knesset Yisrael, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Having said this, we can now appreciate the two wives of Yaakov Avinu and see how they really correlate to these two aspects. Yushalayim, the open revelation that is susceptible to destruction, and Chavron, the secret, the hidden, the eternal connection. Source 16, Jewish souls draw their life and being from the divine present, which is often referred to in the context of Knesset Yisrael. According to our mystical tradition, Knesset Yisrael has two different aspects, and they are named Leah and Rachel. In other words, there are two different sources from which a Jewish soul can draw its life. The first source is accessible to every Jew equally, regardless of its personal merit. Whether righteous or wicked, every Jew is connected to the source by virtue of being a part of the Jewish people. This is the aspect of the divine presence called Leah, or the Alma Dibkasya, the concealed world. That's the world of Chavron. The concealed world is the world that every person is connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu no matter what and no matter who. That's the aspect of Le'emenu. The second source, however, does depend on individual merit. Continuing in 16b on the top, and a person's connection for it is commiserate with its deeds and accomplishments. This aspect of the divine presence is known as Rachel, the Alma Diskalia, the revealed world. And that's why he notes on the next page, if we just take a look for a moment, in source number 19, that there are two types of tikkun chatzot. There's a tikkun leah, which is filled with positive, jubilant singing, which can be said on all days. And then there's a tikkun rocha, which deals with the destruction, the tikkun chatzos, which is said for the mourning of the Jewish people. Rachel Imenu is that aspect of destruction, of mourning. Le'emenu is the aspect of jubilation, the aspect of song. And that is why, in the end of 20, the aspect of Knesset Yisrael, known as Rachel, is the connection between the Jewish soul and God that depends on individual merit. It's the holiness in the Jewish soul that is revealed, and it's vulnerable to sin. This is the aspect of Yushalayim, the Alma Diskalia, the light of revelation, which allows for the possibility for darkness. Thus, in a time of darkness and galus, Tikkun Rachel is a song of limitation and tears and cannot be recited on Shabbat. Wow, Chavron, the city invulnerable to Chorban moving up, is the aspect of the Alma of the Iskasya, which is that supernal union which is never interrupted, and that's why it's appropriate to say Tikkun Leah even on Shabbos. Now we understand, if there are these two different aspects, there's the outer world and the inner world, the world that's always connected and the world that's vulnerable to Chorban, to destruction, we can appreciate that Yaakov Avinu, who is the Bechir HaAvos, Yaakov Avinu, who is the greatest of the forefathers, in order for him to have a perfect marriage, because as we know, their marriage was just a marriage, really, of Hashem's relationship with us, Yaakov Avinu needed to marry both aspects, the Leah aspect and the Rachel aspect, to perfect his marriage with these two women in order to mirror the perfection of God's marriage, Kivyachol, with Klal Yisrael. But says Rav Wolfson, what was Yaakov Avinu's original intention? Yaakov Avinu knew when he first met Rachel that she was going to die young. So Yaakov Avinu in his mind said, let me marry Rachel. Let me bury her in the Maras HaMachpelah, and then I'll marry Leah. Because we know you're not allowed to marry two sisters in one lifetime. But when Lavan switched the order around, and when Lavan made Yaakov Avinu marry Leah first, Yaakov Avinu understood that now he had to marry Rachel because he needed to have this perfect marriage. But he also understood that he's marrying her really not according to what Torah said. And that's why the Ramban points out that Rachel Imenu had to die when they entered Eretz Yisrael. Because in Eretz Yisrael they kept the Torah, and you can't marry two sisters while both are alive. So when Yaakov Avinu originally intended to marry Rachel Imenu first, Yaakov Avinu's mindset was, let me marry Rachel and let me bury her in Maris HaMachpelah. What would this mean philosophically? So source 18 at the arrow. If Yaakov had succeeded in bringing both Leah and Rachel into the Machpelah, the heavenly marriage between Hashem and the Jewish people would have been permanent with respect to both aspects of Knesset Yisrael. Not only would it have been permanent in the aspect of Leah, the hidden level, that's the hidden level that a Pintel Yid, a Jew, is always a Jew and always will remain a Jew. And this is what we've seen throughout Jewish history. No matter what, in times of crisis, we know that a Jew will come out and say, I want to die as a Jew. Many times people want to come out and say, I want to live as a Jew. That aspect of the Pintel Yid is buried in Maris HaMachpelah, that aspect of Leah, that we know is guaranteed. But what happens when we sin? Are we still openly connected to God? And then, had Yaakov Avinu been able to bury Rachel in Hebron, it would have also been permanent in the aspect of Rachel, the open revealed level. And any separation between Hashem and the Jewish people would have been impossible. Even a separation on the visible level. And hence, the entire exile could never have occurred. The creation would have arrived at a state of complete perfection. Had Rachel been buried in Maris HaMachpelah, then that aspect where we can sin, but Hashem will not distance himself from us, would not have been found. Because that aspect of distance would have been gone. Because we would have taken that aspect of the Alma Discalia, the open level, buried it in Hebron and said, God, even on the open level, even when we sin, we're still connected to you. But he wasn't successful. By love and giving Leah first, now he had to marry Rachel in sin, or Bemercha Odin sin, and he was too embarrassed to bring two sisters into the Maris HaMachpelah because he had violated a Torah law. And that explains, my friends, what we say in the Haggadah. And this is in source number 26. We say, Arami Oved Avi Vayevri Mitzrayim. It was an Aramean who tried to destroy my father and went down to Egypt. Where do we see that Lavan tried to destroy Yaakov? Right here. That Lavan tried to destroy the whole fabric of Jewish history by having Leah marry Yaakov first. Because now Rachel isn't the first wife and can't be buried in the Maris HaMachpelah. So according to this, my friend, just to make it a little bit more concrete before we make it very esoteric, Leah Imenu represents that Pintel Yid, that connection that every Jew, even if we sin, even if we're distant, even if we don't know we're Jewish, is connected to God. That's buried in the place called Hebron, that we're always connected to God. Then there's a different aspect of Rachel Imenu, which is the open world, which is based on our behavior. And that world is, sometimes we have the Hester Panim. Sometimes we have the distance. And that's Rachel who's buried along the way. She's not even buried in a city. She's buried along the way because she's crying for her children who are constantly in exile, who are constantly in flux in the give and take of closeness to God. That part wasn't able to be cemented in Hebron. And now indeed we have children going into exile. We indeed have times where Hashem is a bit closer to us and Hashem is a bit farther from us. But again, our question is, why is it this way? Why is it that Leah is the one who's that inner world connected at all times in Hebron and Rachel is that outer world who's crying for her children? So here is a very interesting insight of the Shvilei Pinchas, who says the following in 27. B'schut shamda Leah b'parshas drachim b'chayeha, in the merit of Leah crying in her lifetime, standing on the way, that she shouldn't fall into the chalek, the portion of Esav. Therefore, after she dies, she's not buried outside, but rather she has the merit of being buried inside. But Rachel Imenu, who lived her life inside, she is the one who now is destined to go out and to cry for her children. Leah Imenu spent her whole life crying on the crossroads. She is buried in the place of connection. Rachel Imenu, who spent her whole life in the inner world, now is spent on the crossroads crying for her children. On this, there's a very beautiful Zohar, a very deep Zohar, but I think a very powerful Zohar. And this is really the Nekuda. It's a bit esoteric, but I think a very powerful idea that I want to draw our attention to for our lives. There's a Zohar that speaks about, in the Gemara Chagiga, there's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, V'im lo tishma'ua b'mestarim tivken nafshi mipnei gava, that God is crying in the secret place because of the glory. And the glory is the glory of Klal Yisrael that has been destroyed by the nations. And the Zohar speaks about that there are two aspects of Kivyachol of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's one place, which is the Bevatei Gavai, an inner place, which there's only Simcha. Source number 31, Oz V'chedva Bimkomo. In this place, Hashem rejoices. And then there's an outer place, which is the Bevatei Barai, where there Hashem cries, and there, b'mistarim tivken nafshi, there in a secretive place, God weeps. What's going on here? God's crying, God's weeping, what? God's happy? How do we explain this? So he says, we understand that our world in 31 is not like the next world. Ha'olam hazeh b'soros tovos omer baruch hatova meitiv. In our world, on difficult things, on good things, we say, thank you, Hashem. And on bad news, we say, Baruch Dayana MS, we bless the true judge. But la'olam haba, in the future, it will be an olam that's kulo hatova meitiv, it's a world that is kulo, totally good. And what does this mean? So we know in 31, what in our eyes looks to be something terrible, it's only because the mishum shetach einenu mir'ota, because we are lacking the inner vision of seeing the good in it. But when Kadosh Baruch Hu, we should be worthy of Hashem taking us out of our darkness, then we will see in retrospect that that which we saw as being to our detriment was really for our good. And we will be able to see that everything is hatov, hametiv, everything is for the good. Now, with this we can explain. Obviously, Hashem, looking down at our world, understands that everything's for our good. But he also understands that, my friends, this is so powerful and so deep. Ach mekevan shanashim, 32 in the middle, krutzei chomer, but because HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that we are so limited, and we don't have the vision of seeing that everything is good. That we are in this world and we're in a world of tragedy. We're in a world of suffering. We're in a world that a 23-year-old, first-time person who's looking forward to be able to be an Ein Yisrael, a mother in Israel, a young lady who I had the schus of teaching, Adira, the Shiram dedicating in her memory, a young lady who personified the mitos of the Imahos, a person of Sneus, a person of an inner world, but a person who had Simcha Sachayim, Simcha Sahala Alpanah, always with a smile, a genuine joy of life, in a Sneus way, in an internal way, but beaming and happy. A person who understood what it means to be a Bas Yisrael in the fullest sense. How do we understand that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will take somebody away that she doesn't even have the schus of being able to see her own child, to have a little girl growing up not knowing her biological mother? My friends, this is beyond us to see. Us, Krutzei Chomer, us in our very narrow vision say, you know, we don't understand it. We can't even say anything. Lachain alatzar hazeh Shisrael mitzarim ala eder gilui atov shebetoch hara. Because the Kaddish Baruch Hu understands that Kla Yisrael has a lack of being seeing and being revealed the open goodness, mishtatek HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'tzairam shal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understanding our pain, is mishtatek. He joins with our pain. B'mestarim tifke nafshi. He is crying kivyachol mipnei gava because of us. Yes, nachona devar shein kam shumra. You're right. Intellectually, not even intellectually, truthfully, the absolute truth is there is no bad. Kulo tova meti. But because we can't see it, so Kadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol comes down to where we're at and joins us in our complete pain. And he has this place of the weeping and the place of this crying. And this place is this outer world. It's this ofen chitzoni, this outer house, so to speak, that Hashem is crying. And in this house, it's called b'mestarim tivken nafshi. In a secret place, Hashem cries. Which means in 34, l'chein mastir kadosh baruch hu kivyachol me'atzmo b'vatei barai, shekol ma shekareh lanu b'galut hi l'tova. What does it mean in a secret place? It's as if in this place, kivyachol, Hashem has to hide from himself the ultimate truth. Hashem cries in a secret place, because if Hashem weren't in this world to be kivyachol, to be master himself, he, so to speak, has to hide the ultimate truth that everything is good from himself, so that he'll be able to be really mishtate, to really feel and join within our pain, and to be able to cry with us. And it's in this place, my friends, in the place of the Golos, in the place of the Choshech Anan V'Arafel, in the place of this darkness that surrounds Kivyachol Kadosh Baruch Hu, where we don't see this clarity of goodness, that this is the place, this is the outer world, this is the Alma Diskalia, the revealed world, this is the place known as Kever Rachel. Kever Rachel is the epitome, so to speak, of the outer world, which is crying for the pain of Klal Yisrael. It's a world which mirrors kivyachol, that hidden secretive place that Hashem joins in this crying, in this weeping, for the pain of Klal Yisrael, for the galus hashchina, for the pain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, kivyachol, that he needs to cry that the world hasn't come to its ultimate revelation. And that's what Kever Rachel is about. It's that place of tears. It's a place of weeping. It's a place where we are struggling with pain. It's a place that we pour out our hearts and pour out our tears, and we say we're living in a world of Hester. B'mestarim tivken nafshi is really mirroring our own life. Hashem kivyachol has to hide himself from the truth, but we, in a real sense, are crying in this world of b'mestarim, because we are in a world of Hester. We are in a world of darkness. We are in a world of concealed good, where we don't see, we don't understand what we're going through. And that is what Kever Rachel epitomizes and symbolizes. Le'e Menu, Chevron, on the other hand, is the idea of the Barate Gavai, the inner world, Rahod Vahadar Lefanav Oz Vechedva Bimkomo. In that inner world, it's a world of rejoicing. It's a world of song. It's a Tikkun Leah. It's a world that is Lefanav. The asterisk in 35, the second asterisk, Klomar Sham Yesh Hod Vahadar. There's a world of glory, Mishum Lefanav, because it's in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol. Shekadosh Baruch Hu roev yodea mashatid liot lefanav, because Hashem knows what will be in front of him. Lachein oz v'chevev b'mkomo, because Hashem knows his ultimate good. Hashem knows what is, that everything is for the ultimate good. And in that inner place, which is the place of chevrov, the place of connection, the place of le'ein menu, the alma, Ditkasya, the concealed world, that is the place of rejoicing, that is the place of kol kulo goodness. And obviously our job in 38, Rabbi Kiva says, La'olam yehe adam ragyo lamar kol ta'avi rachmana l'tavavi. We have to work on being able to cry over the golus hashchina. We have to cry over the pain that we're on, but at the same time, try to be able to almost unite the kever rochel with the kever leah. Yes, we're crying. Yes, we're in pain. Yes, it's difficult, but we can't stop at kever rochel. We have to go to kever leah as well, and be able by leah menu to be able to be mash, get the hashpa of oh hod v'hadar lufana, oh zvechedva bimkomo, to feel the rejoicing, to feel the happiness. My friends, this duality of the tears of Rachel Imenu, Miniko Lech Mibechi, the Lei Imenu, the Chevron, the Ema Banim Smecha, as Lei is referred to, the ultimate happy wife who gives birth to Yehuda, to Malchus, to Levi, to Kahuna, these two have to be bridged. And it's interesting that in the real sense, they're bridged as soon as Binyamin is born. Rachel, characteristically, the mother of tears, calls him Ben Oni, the child of my affliction. And Yaakov Avinu, who was just named Yisrael, says no. His name is Binyamin. We have to see this very event as a point of strength, as a point of moving onward, as a point of building, and not only the negative and the pain, but being able to see the positive as well. As Rav Gifter points out at the end of 40, Ha'oni v'atzar v'yogo, the pain, the agony, Huimakor l'chaim chadashim, has to be a fuel of a new life, v'or chadash, and new energy in our avodas Hashem. I think perhaps, my friends, we can suggest that the two names of Yaakov Avinu really reflect these two aspects. And the fact that Yaakov Avinu is called by both of these names is a model for us of somehow trying to integrate both of these concepts together. That yes, we live in a world of pain and difficulty, and in the outer world there's a lot of tears, but yet there remains an inner world where everything is for the good, and there is a tremendous joy and happiness. We know Yaakov Avinu has two names. Rabbi Eliyahu Kito brings down the famous idea that Yaakov is used when we're referring to Remez Alagolios, when we're talking about exile, and Yisrael, the concept of being victorious, Yashar El, is the ability of Geula, of redemption. And we know, which is brought down from Rav Dessler in 42, that these two names of Yaakov and Yisrael reflect both wives. Leah Imenu is connected, obviously, to the Yisrael aspect, to the Maris Machpelah aspect, to the aspect of the Geula, to the aspect of the Simcha, the rejoicing, the victory. And Yaakov Avinu, who's the struggle, who's the Ekev, who's the heel, which represents the struggles of this world, is connected to Rachel Imenu, the one who is crying. But my friends, I think it goes even deeper than this. Why does Yaakov Avinu raise up his voice and cry? And Vayisak Halo Vayech, a very powerful term, the first time he sees Leah Imenu. So it's a very beautiful idea, L'machara Tira Moshe Breslover, and he says the following. But there he foresees how Rachel Imenu is going to be buried along the way, and she's going to be crying for her children. And this idea of Kol B'Raman Nishman Nehi B'Chit Amurim, Yaakov Avinu foresees this. Yaakov Avinu envisions this the first time they meet. And he says, But Zeh Yitvaru with the asterisks in 46, Hadarim, Shekol Zerah Yaakov Baruch HaKodesh Eik Nifkashu, he sees this the first time they meet. Lachain Bacha Al Galud Banav L'Tzarfo L'Bachia Shal Rochel Shatida Lifkot B'shas ha-maiseh, ki yadah shelo yikaber ima v'lo yeh ima v'chiyata. Why does Yaakov Avinu cry now, says Machar Atir, a gevaldik chiddush? because Yaakov Avinu at this moment sees he will not be buried with her. That ultimately he's going to be buried with Leah Imenu. Ultimately he's going to be the Yisrael. He's going to be the one who's going to see the goodness. But there's a part of Yaakov Avinu, because he's one and the same, who says, yes, I'm going to be buried as Yisrael. I'm not going to be buried with Rachel along the way. But that doesn't mean there's not a part of me, there's not the Yaakov part of me who feels the pain that Rachel Imenu feels. When Yaakov Avinu lifts up his voice and cries, it's like he is connecting an eternal cry of his with hers. That not only is Rachel mevakeh al baneha, but that Yaakov is also mevakeh al banav, the Yaakov aspect. That aspect of Yochel b'Kadosh Baruch Hu crying. There's that outer world of Yaakov Avinu that's crying with Rachel. And there's the inner world of Oz v'chedva b'mkomo, the rejoicing of Yisrael with Leah. And it's just technical, the Ber Yosef points out in 45, that Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to tell Rachel why he's crying about this deep agony of Jewish history. So that's why there's a Davar Ocher of Rashi about the jewelry. But the real reason is about being buried. But Rachel Imenu wouldn't be able to understand this at the first moment. So the second answer of Rashi is just but a pretext. My friends, let's summarize and end with one final idea for our lives. Rachel Imenu is buried along the way. She is the mother par excellence. She is the one by Yosef HaTzadik who paves the way of davening at Kevar Rachel. That this is the place of Mama Rachel, who's always davening for us, who's always watching over us, who's always taking care of us. On a deeper level, Leah Imenu represents the one who cried in her lifetime. She is the inner world, the connector world of Chevron. Rachel Imenu was not able to be brought into Chevron, the outer world, the world that we can disconnect from God, the world of pain, the world of misery, the world of suffering, the world of exile, the world where we don't understand things. But in that world, my friends, Kivyachol Hashem is crying in this hidden way where he has to hide himself from himself. And we are crying in this hidden part where we can't see with full clarity that Tova Meitiv, that everything is for the best. But clearly our challenge is to be able to combine both together, to be a Yaakov and a Yisrael in one, that there are times for tears, but there also has to be as well the times to say, Kol Da'avid Rachmana L'Tov Avid, that everything is for the good. I'd like to end with a piece from Rav Schechter Sefer, Lights on the Path, based on Rav Nachman Mibreslov's teaching. And he says just one or two ideas. Each of us in 47 face tests in this world, challenges to our dreams and aspiration, physical ones, emotional ones. How much better if we could live without them? But really, if we can accept these tests positively and recognize they're sent by God for our own good, then we achieve much more than if we merely breeze through life without effort. Because when we accept life challenges joyfully, the problems themselves are turned into good. And that's the idea in 48, when Moshe Rabbeinu is at a place called Marah, when the waters are bitter. He could have davened to Hashem and asked him for a new body of water. Just give me sweet water. But instead Hashem says, no, take this bitter tree and turn it and throw it into the water, and it will turn into sweet. The answer is that Moshe knew of two methods, but God taught him that the correct approach is to turn the bitter sweet, for this reveals God's power to transform negativity into something positive. And the same applies to our prayers. We must beg God to reveal the pure sweetness that can be granted from even the difficult times. God does not bring troubles upon us needlessly. He wants us to acknowledge him even amidst our difficulties, in order that the heart's judgment should be sweetened and the gvuros turn to chasadim as a result of our prayers and longing for deliverance. But he notes in source 50, how should a person relate to the difficulties found in life? The first is, he says, is actually make use of suffering for good purpose. And he explains by saying, if you feel if you're having problems in life, the first thing to do is acknowledge the truth of the situation as it is. Say the situation is bad, the pain is real, and it's perfectly natural to be upset. You should never try to convince yourself that a bad situation is good. Absolutely not. These thoughts are false, and God hates falsehood. And you can't be depressed over the fact that you're upset. It's natural to be upset. You need to have the kevarachol of the crying. You need to have that outer world of feeling the pain. However, in 52, even in difficult times, we should be at least grateful that we feel something, that we have not become insensitive, that we are, can be happy that we perceive what's happening to us. We can be happy that we have a relationship with the God who loves us. And when we affirm God's personal involvement in our lives in 53, and we hear God speaking to us through the life's trials, that we should come closer to Him, and that nothing is accidental, and everything is planned precisely for the good of our souls in this life and from previous lives, and whatever befalls us is only for our eternal good. If after we feel the pain, and after we spend time at Kever Rachel, at some point we need to move to Kever Leah and say, on whatever level we can, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of me. And this is what Rav Nachman meant when he said we can transform suffering to joy, because we understand it's not by accident. We can understand there's a purpose in this world. We can understand there's a larger picture. And in that picture, there's oz v'chedva bimkomo. There's a place of joy and rejoicing. And my friends, my bracha to all of us is that this young lady, Adira, who was clearly mita sadiki mechaperet, who was a kapara for all of Klal Yisrael, and that this should be just one step closer bringing the Mashiach, that we should be able to see in life that even in these difficult situations in life, and whatever difficult situations we go through, the first step is baderech, the first place we meet is Kever Rachel. It's a place of tears, it's a place of crying. But recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also crying there. Hashem is also with us in our pain. And then we need to move to Kever Leah, to Mar Tzemach Pelah, the place of Chibur, the place of connection. Move from the crying of Yaakov and Rachel to the burial of Leah and Yisrael, the place where the ultimate connection between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where we recognize that Kol Da'avid Rachmanu L'Tavavid, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is for the good, and that we should daven that one day, very soon, that goodness should be revealed to us so we understand that everything in this world is HaTova Meitiv, is for the good.